Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm Andy Clef, your host today, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Mahlud. How are you? Did I get your name pronounced right, the first one?
Yes, you did. You didn't dare going for the second one, did you?
No. Ceccarelli.
That's good. That's good enough. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
You were with us almost 2 years ago to the day on a previous episode where you spoke with Colleen and Jay about working with remote agile teams. At that point, you talked about a book working on and a seminar that you're covering. And we'll dive into both of those today. Other things we want to talk about, communication, how things have evolved over time, and then what we're both doing in terms of self-care and how that impacts our ability to serve others.
Sounds for like those, a great agenda.
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar with you or haven't had a chance to listen to previous podcasts, give us a quick elevator pitch. Nobody's in elevators anymore. We got to come up with a new name. Give us a quick Zoom intro.
That's a very good one. All right. So I am Mahlud Ceccarelli. I actually had a different name 2 years ago when I was on the podcast. I have since gotten married, written a book, grown my business. I already had the business and had many, many, many different clients. The work that I have done in my career, or the significant work that I have done, is creating Remote Forever. That's a company that is bringing remote working to the agile world. And obviously, along the lines of that, I also help companies that are transforming to agile ways of working to transition to remote working. That is getting their processes working across different offices, or nowadays in 2020, that would be operating their businesses while everybody is sitting in their homes. Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be featured in places like Forbes, Inc., Huffington Post, and in 2020, I have gotten to speak so far at nearly 50 different conferences and podcasts, and the invitations keep coming and I keep saying yes. So I am looking forward to that last bit of this podcast where we're going to talk about self-care. That is a very short intro to who I am and what I'm doing these days.
Wow, you've been busy. So as I was thinking about preparing for the show and looking back on my own journey, I realized that I did remote work a long time ago and never really called it that. Had two young kids, wanted to be there when they got on the school bus, wanted to be there when they got home. And so I had a graphic design shop. This was way back when, kiddos, in the 1990s. And I did remote working, but we did it in a different way because the internet hadn't quite blossomed as much. We had FedEx overnight packages. We had same day courier packages. We did faxes and we had conference calls. And in effect, it was remote, but it felt so different when I thought about that than today. And I'm curious, what the heck has changed? I'm exhausted at the end of the day of remote working. Whereas previously, you know, I enjoyed the fax coming in and couldn't wait for the FedEx in the morning. What's different?
Technology became ubiquitous. We have such easy access to it that we have become slaves to technology. That's my very honest opinion about it. I am much younger than the internet, clearly. And one of the things that I notice when you're saying this is remote work was a thing, but you didn't call it that. And this has been true for me too, all my life. I've been able to collaborate with classmates in elementary school all the way through college and later on in my jobs, whatever the job was. So we always worked remotely or collaborated remotely, but never called it that until very recently. The term seems to have been coined really recently. And I wonder, now that you mention it, whether or not it's been coined by people who are pro-offices and wanted to shun remote working. Why did this happen? Where did we come here? But yeah, at the end of the day, it is that technology is in our hands and we use it for so many different things. And social networks have reduced our attention spans. It's
what were we talking about? I just got distracted. Something on Facebook popped up. I'm kidding. Yeah. So going back to my design days, I lived on the East Coast outside of Philadelphia. We had clients in DC. We had clients up in Maine, up and down the East Coast. And maybe once or twice a year, we'd make it a point to travel there. But the rest of the time, we managed okay. And the travel time wasn't a big deal. And it became more social human connection, mm-hmm. right? To be able to break bread and have a drink and be in the same physical space mm-hmm. was something to celebrate. I'm wondering if you missed that. You know, you talked about collaborating with classmates all along. Did you ever want to be in the same space, or did you find equivalent substitutes for that real human connection? Somebody described it as, we need to be hugged 8 times a day or we shrivel. How is that different in the world you've experienced?
That's a very good question. So there are two different types of relationships that you mentioned in this very, very quick intro to the question. And one was, we need to be hugged. Well, let me just ask those of you who work in offices, how many times have you been hugged by your colleagues? That's the thing, right? We're talking about personal relationships and work relationships, and they are fundamentally different. Yes, it's possible to become very close friends and hug each other in the work environment too, but we don't necessarily draw our satisfaction for relationships from our work relationships. So if I missed it, yes, because I was a student and my work colleagues were my friends. And yes, I wanted to party with them and go out with them. So when they were in their own countries and collaborating on something, I couldn't wait for the product that was most often a party or a trip or a seminar or a brochure to talk about any of those things. But later on in work environments, it was different. I worked as a project manager for an integration project back in the time. And my colleagues were in Canada and Serbia and Germany and in Sweden. And I was in Sweden too. But like we were in two different cities in Sweden. So this whole team, we worked so well together. And I remember one day, there was a guy in the office who came to me and said, it's so good to see you, Mulud. And I just looked up at my desk and I was like, who are you again? And he said, I'm John. I just landed from Canada. I'm like, oh, we've been working for a year. And I would not have guessed that's how you looked like, even though I had seen him on camera. It just didn't connect, right? So yeah. When I met him, that was the very first time. And of course, I wanted to hug him, but that was not culturally accepted. So I just shook his hand.
But that could be the same, right? So physical touch in the workplace has many forms, right? It could be the handshake. It could be the fist bump, the elbow bump, the pat, what's appropriate for the individuals and the team. But technology and 2020 has really changed all that.
It has. What I'm really trying to say with this story of getting into, you know, the difference between personal relationships and work relationships is the purpose that each of them serve. Mm. 2020 has been very special in the fact that we've been starved even for the personal relationships because we've been isolated. So to blame right. it on, hey, we're working remotely and therefore I'm starved, that's, I think, wrong. Because it is possible to really connect and collaborate remotely and create something magical in the world. But in order to fist bump and shake hands and all of that, I mean, that's not really the purpose of the work. That's just a byproduct of working in the same location or existing under the same roof.
Yeah. There's equivalent ways to connect. And for those of us who have done remote working pre-COVID, we've had all kinds of fun things, right? Point your camera out the window. Let me see what you've got. Share the last photo. Show me the socks you have on today. Are you wearing socks, you know?
Yeah, I'm wearing socks.
And so they,
and they're
they
actually
become,
funny.
Do they match? Mine match today, which is really great.
Yeah, they do match. They're very funny.
And so there's those things that we use to connect as human beings. Mm. Cats and dogs walk past, kids and partners come in the screen. And for many of us who are used to remote working, it's just normal life.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody who was thrust into it in the middle of March, I imagine it was a shock. But here we are almost 8 months later. I wonder if it's settled down. I wonder what's next. What do you see as a gap? You know, if this goes on for another year for people that have been their entire career working in an office and now they aren't, what's needed in the next generation of, quote, remote working or working from home or living at work?
In one word, tolerance. Mm. I want to add to that, flexibility. What we're talking about here reminds me of the beginning of the Agile movement. Well, not exactly the beginning, maybe like 10 years after Agile had already had its manifesto and it was starting to be adopted in many countries in the world. Think like 2010, 11.
Yeah.
At that time, there were a lot of people who were going to get their certifications to be Scrum Masters and product owners. And we were starting to see the uprising of Agile priests who believed in the purity of Agile, who allowed themselves to go into organizations and say, you're doing Agile wrong. The way to do Agile is the way I learned in my course. Let me teach you how that's done. And there was this polarity created in the Agile world where there were some people who were prescribing Agile. And now I see the same thing happen with remote working. There are people who are purists. They're like, you're either remote or you will fail. You're either going to do this way and become remote forever, which ironically is the name of my company, or you won't survive. What I think is the future is the possibility of people, companies, organizations to really get to the core of Agile. And what is that? That is the possibility to be able to respond to the changes that come our way. So I don't think that going forward, every single company would be remote. But I think that because now many of us have the experience of communicating and collaborating remotely, that we would be able to bring that style of working into our organizations. We'd become more empathetic towards people who are not in the same office with us. And we'd probably, if we're smart enough and we want our businesses to survive and thrive, go as far as creating processes and operations and systems in the organizations that support remote first. And that means you should be able to do your job wherever you are, whether you're in the office or not. There should be no difference. And I think the next level of that would be the culture building. So us who are in the Agile world, who have been working with culture and change management that comes into organization, I think it's really our duty to become very good at getting people to communicate and collaborate remotely so that we can continue to make that impact on the organizations around the world that are challenged with adopting Agile at the same time as figuring out how to collaborate remotely.
I'm currently on an engagement supporting an Agile journey. I don't want to use the T word, at scale. And one of our sponsors described in really passionate terms at a kickoff where we're talking about the satire curve and the dip. He said, look, at the end of March, within 3 weeks, we took a company of 80,000 people and made them remote. You guys can do anything. Don't be afraid of this transformation dip that's coming ahead. And so, you know, the power to do this is there. Remote forever can exist. But I want to dive into the tension between flexibility and empathy and collaboration and constraints so that we can have effective communication that we used to have in the same space at the same time called a meeting over different time zones, over different geographies, and still have effective collaboration. So I'm curious, what are some things that you're seeing that enable that asynchronous working with not a huge amount of time overlap?
Mm-hmm. So here's the top question that I get when I'm consulting or when I'm hosting a workshop or teaching a workshop. The top question that I get is, Mulud, what tool should we use in order to communicate better?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I get that. But as you saw in the shaky start of this podcast episode, where we started talking about hugging and touching each other, we also talked about what happened. How did we get here? Why are we so paralyzed with communication when it was so easy 20 years ago? So the question is, what tool should I use? But when I look beyond that, I see that people have a large stack of tools. They're already using so many different tools for different types of things and for similar things. They have multiple tools to do the exact same thing. And yet their question is, what tool should I use? So here's my answer. What is the purpose of what you're trying to achieve? And usually people have not even thought about that.
Exactly. Just tell me, should I use, you know, Miro or Mural or whiteboard or like, and the question always is, so what, why? I love that.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, oftentimes when I ask this question, what is the purpose of what you're trying to achieve? The answer is communication. So I have to go beyond that, use my coaching skills to ask even more questions to go beyond that. Why are you trying to communicate? What is going to come out of that communication? What is the artifact that you're trying to get? What kind of collaboration you're looking for? So for people who are used to standing up next to a whiteboard and just pick up a marker and draw and convey their messages, they just want to be able to replicate that same thing online, and they're frustrated for why they're not. And then they go to Miro or Mural or other tools that allow them to do that. But I think what they have forgotten is what they were trying to do.
Right.
Now, you're asking me about sync and async, right? So let me just give you a little introduction to communication in remote working and all of those of you guys who are listening to this. So when we're working remotely, we're very deliberate about what communication means. Communication divides into two parts: synchronous communication and asynchronous communication. The definition of communication on its own is exchange of information. There's nothing really beyond that. There's no purpose in communication. It's just exchange of information. Purpose is something else. So don't tell me that the purpose of whatever you're trying to do or the tool you're getting is communication. So in synchronous communication, we have meetings. I say something, you say something. It's like a ping pong kind of conversation. We exchange conversation in real time. It can be chatting. It can be meeting each other online. It can be having a telephone call or, you know, VoIP conversation. But whatever it is, it's happening in real time. Then we have asynchronous conversations or communication. And that is when you say something and then you wait. And the recipient receives that information and processes it and then responds. And he waits or she waits. And then you respond at your own time. So what is happening in these two different types is in synchronous communication, AKA meetings and real-time chats, you exchange the information, or at least attempt to exchange the information, when you are ready to say something, regardless of whether or not the recipient is ready to receive it. Versus in asynchronous, you say whatever you want to say when you're ready to say it, but you give the recipient the freedom and the right to process it and receive it and process it when they are ready to receive it. So that's the fundamental difference between these two. And the challenge is, when you are not used to working remotely, you default to synchronous because that's how you worked in an office. So what happened to you guys listening to this? What happened in 2020 when you were forced to work from home and collaborate remotely? What happened to your calendars? Did they get filled with meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting? Well, this is a symptom that you were never trained to collaborate effectively remotely, because great remote works are great at asynchronous communication. They default to asynchronous communication. They allow every single individual the freedom to receive and process information on their own time. And synchronous, AKA meetings, are reserved for emergencies. They are reserved for opportunities where it's impossible to communicate asynchronously, when speed matters, or for conflict resolution, or maybe coaching. So
there
that is
a difference. Yeah, there's a huge skill set that when it's missing in async communication, it's so obvious, but when it's employed, it almost goes without notice. It's like fine
It's like
crafts.
Ops, right?
Yeah, fine craft work. You know, you look at it and you don't notice errors or joinery errors. And sometimes it's as simple as use of single, you know, a question that's not stacked. Do you want A, B, C, or D? Yes. Or assume the context in your head. Yeah, he said thing. You know, in really good async communication, you take a little bit of extra time and you elaborate. And maybe that's the empathy element you're talking about, projecting how your async message will be received by somebody else minutes, hours later. And do they have the full context that
oh,
you
I
think
love that
they
word.
Have?
I love that word, context. So I've recently started working with someone in my company who's not very used to remote working. And my main challenge working with this particular person is exactly that. So I think that only yesterday I had to comment, what is the context? What is the context? What is the context? Because I'm sure that in this person's head, the context was super clear, but to me, it wasn't.
Clear. Right. Yeah, that I find that is a huge difference in async versus synchronous communication. You know, when you're in the same room looking at a whiteboard, you know what everybody's looking at. When we're async, completely separate.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears a little bit and think about it from the individual perspective. What have you done, or what are you doing, or what do you have planned? What's in your personal backlog for the rest of 2020? What's your change log look like as the reality of COVID, and not the reality of remote working, because you've been doing that for forever, but the reality of the environment that 2020 has created? What are you playing with? Maybe it falls under, you know, self-care, self-leadership, because if that's not there, we're of very little use to others we serve.
I think I'd like to start with self-awareness and the shock that I got when the pandemic hit and everybody had to work from home. Because many people around me, they were like, oh my God, this must be heaven for you, Mulud. You've been working remotely forever. Now it's just so good. Like you know all the skills. You have everything that you need to do this. And the reality is, when we were forced to work from home, that was the first moment I realized I did not have a desk in my home, because I never, ever worked from home. I was a remote worker who was working from cafes and hotel lobbies and co-working spaces. And I moved around and I loved that freedom so much so that I never, ever worked from home. So the idea of being stuck at home was new to me. The idea of not having that freedom to move around was new to me. And it has affected how 2020 has gone so far and where it's going. So I've had to work a lot on identifying, like looking back, being self-aware and identifying what was it that was working for me? What was I doing that was helping me move forward and move forward so fast? So I am a simple person in my life, as in I intentionally simplified my life about 10 years ago and I have religiously kept at it. And that means I live a minimalist life. I don't have a lot of clutter in my home. The picture you see behind me is, by the way, not my home. It's fake. It's a virtual background. For those of you who don't see it, it's a picture of a beautiful Scandinavian apartment. But I'm using that because I don't really have a lot of space in my apartment. So talking about simplicity and identifying what was working, I realized that before, when I did not work from home, I had very clear boundaries around different activities that was taking place in my life. I knew exactly when it was lunchtime, when it was dinner time, when it was time to work out, where I was going to do each of those activities and where work was. The physical environment was defining the time that I was investing in the activity. But when it was home, everything was happening in the same location and it was hard to manage that. So I realized there must be a correlation between location and time. So I literally used my calendar. And I blocked my calendar for the activities that needed to take place because now the location was not there to guide me. That's part of my self-discipline. I rely highly on my calendar. Everything needs to be there. If it's not there, it doesn't exist. And that's synchronized with the task management system that I use for my work to collaborate with my team. We use Basecamp, and Basecamp is also really making us keep things simple. It's forcing us to be simple. It's impossible to complicate things. So back to self-discipline, self-leadership, identifying boundaries, that's number one. Figuring out what works for you is number two. For me, the calendar works. For you, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's something else. But figure out what works and define those boundaries for yourself. The third thing that's usually a surprise to a lot of people when I tell them is back to the main question that I get. It's about the tools. I use different tools for creating that kind of boundary. So I sometimes work with my husband for several different projects. And you know how it is to work with a relative, right? It's not always easy to separate the relationships. So the idea that I came up with was to separate the tools in which we communicate different contexts. So if you're talking about the tools, it's always on Basecamp. If we're talking, and yes, we live in the same place, but we're from that generation who exists in the same physical location, but still communicates in writing and chat. So if it is personal, it's never in Basecamp or in Slack or any other work-related tool. It's always either, nice, you know, verbally, or it's on Signal, which is another chat app. So I actually just got a message and he says, do you want coffee? On Signal, that is personal. That's not work related, right?
Yeah.
So separating tools is another one. It's a very important one that people don't think about. You might be friends with some of your colleagues, but if you're talking to them in the same tool, you're mixing the friendship with the work relationship. And in the long run, you might actually not be able to create the boundaries. So you might end up working at 11 p.m. or having a casual conversation while you're having lunch. Mixing those two is never a good idea. So this is a very quick tip to just agree together to use separate tools for the different sides of your relationship.
Working agreements.
Yep. Working agreements are useful.
Yes, relationship agreements. I love it. Have you added new hobbies, routines to deal with the fact that you're not getting out to the coffee shop, the cafe, the co-working space to compensate for that, whatever that fed for you?
It is still a work in progress, but yes, I have added a few new habits. One of them is that I realize that I do not enjoy cooking that much. I used to love cooking before the pandemic. Not anymore. I'm cooking once a week for the whole week and just keeping it in the fridge. So that's become a routine. It's part of my Sunday routine. Other things are I wake up and I have a morning routine. So when I wake up, I usually don't check my phone or my email or anything like that for about an hour. In that hour, I do a little bit of yoga, I take a shower, and I really like try to clear my head about what's about to happen in the day. And I sit down and think about it before I open the computer. Other things that have become part of my habit, and I'm actually not very good at this one yet, but I'm working on it. And that is to keep the work environment separate from the rest of the environment that we have at home. And I tell you why it's not easy. First of all, because I live in a very small apartment. And as I told you, I didn't have a desk when this whole thing happened. So I borrowed the table that we had in our little balcony and I brought it inside and I set up a really cute corner with a studio. I actually had a white umbrella that I used it as a dimmer for the lighting. So it's a whole DIY studio that I set up for myself. And recently I decided to switch rooms. So I moved to the bedroom instead of being in the living room. And I'm finding it very difficult. Working and sleeping in the same environment is not very good. But experimentation is what I've been going through, really. I might make it work in the bedroom, or I might just have to go back to the living room.
Yeah.
What about you, Andy? What have you done? I'm curious about this one.
I'm a work in progress. I've
like
been
me?
trying to establish routines, and earlier in the year, I was doing much better. I would get up and run. I'd have breakfast, shower, go to work. What kept me going for running was a quarterly race, you know, that stretched. It was further than I had done before, or it was back to back. And so the need to get in the time and the miles drove me. But in April, all of those things were canceled. They became virtual. I tried to keep my routine, and I did okay through about June and July, and then I just burn out. You know, to run 35 miles out a week is a big commitment, and to have a, you know, half a weekend with a half marathon and a full marathon as a goal, with you know, 30,000 other people running and 50,000 people ringing cowbells, gave me the battery power to keep going. But when those,
I know what you mean.
When those races were like canceled, it's virtual, I my slack capacity was gone. And so what I had to dig into was grace for myself, forgiveness. I ran 5 miles this week. That's okay. 10 miles.
Yeah. It's the same with me and yoga. I really don't enjoy yoga that much, but I'm pushing myself to enjoy it because I used to do strength training before in a gym. And it's not very easy to do that at home. I still do try it, but I'm really trying to learn to enjoy yoga, which is very hard for me. But yeah, it's all about practice and being a work in progress and just being kind to ourselves, really.
Yes. And I have a sticky everywhere that says everybody's doing the best they can.
That's a good one.
Right? To remind myself that if I get frustrated with somebody who said they were going to do something but didn't, or somebody who shows up and they're a mess, is they're doing the best they can too. And this world and this year has thrown all of us into chaos. Even if we thought we were ready to go and prepared for this, this 8 months that's going to continue on, and we need a lot of resilience. For me, the other aspect of resilience is something you talked about, putting in constraints, right? Now that my office is in the corner of the bedroom, I pull a curtain around it to hide it, so I don't go back to work when I'm done.
That's a very good one. I think we didn't appreciate physical boundaries before.
Right. What you talked about, the act of walking out of the living, the personal living environment, even if it was a block up the street to a coffee shop and sitting down, was great. I don't know if I just put on my shoes, walk out the front door, come in the back door, and then go to work. But that might be useful to create that segmentation,
exactly.
Barrier. And then putting in the constraints of, I'm not going to look at email after a certain amount of time. I'm not going to open up Slack after a certain amount of time. The other thing that's difficult for me, and I haven't solved it, is interpersonal connections, right? Now that we're facing another winter with cases on the rise, I'm hesitant to go out and meet and greet friends.
I have
an aging father. I've got a daughter that has some underlying health conditions. So I'm on the cautious scale. So I'm looking for replacements, and maybe they're in nature to some people. The text messages help, just a connection, thinking of you, an emoji to my daughter of a smiling face or a cloud.
Actually, that is exactly what my father does for his daughters. That's very good. I think your daughter would appreciate it, because I wake up every morning to an emoji or a nice video of some flower or some nature from my father that says good morning. He is in a different country and he lives about 3 hours before I do. But it's so heartwarming to wake up to that message every single day. And he's sharing that with all of his kids in a group chat. I think that for us, or for my family, we live in, let me see, 5 different countries, actually. And we have a very deep connection to each other. We're always there for each other. I personally always feel like they're there and they're aware of whatever is happening in my life. And I'm aware of what's happening in their life. How did we get there? How were we able to create that deep connection? And it came so naturally and so slowly over the past decade that we have lived this life. So this might be, you know, interesting for people who are company leaders and are wondering, how do I bring the people as close as they were when they were in an office? Because yes, at some point, me and my family, we all lived in the same house, no longer. So what are some of the concrete ways that we have kept the connection going? One of them is personal responsibility.
And it's, you know, that connection, I see it with groups that I support that are suddenly remote. It defaults to transactional in nature, which is not the social connection, right?
No.
That's a huge area of opportunity for people to make time, either at the beginning or the end, to connect as human beings before we get into, okay, what's the job that needs to be done in this half hour Zoom call?
For me, the big part of this is really defining if I am working with someone or if I am socializing with someone. I do love the idea of socializing in the beginning of a work session, but the awkwardness of it is everybody knows it's a work session. You see that? So having a social setup, that's actually my recommendation. I meet with my team members for lunches, for coffees, casually. I don't make it like a manager-employee kind of relationship, but I say, hey, I miss you. I just really want to connect with you. Can we have coffee sometime? And because they know that when we're having coffee, we don't talk work at all.
Exactly.
Unless it's really like something that we want to make fun of or something that's a joke that would just add context to the social connection. And I notice that people don't want to do that.
Well, because their calendars are quadruple booked from 6 in the morning till 8 at night.
Yeah.
And as you said, if you do it at the beginning of every meeting, by the 5th meeting of the day, it's exhausting, even though it's with different people. But purposely setting aside opt-in social connection, that's a wonderful. But, you know, carving out the time. When I look at coworkers' calendars and clients' calendars, it's just, overload. Anyway, we're coming up on the end of our time box. I want to check in. How's your book? Where's it at? Remoteforever.com/ebook.
It's changing all the time. It's the version that is on the website that people can get it. That's the old one. I've been updating it for the whole year, actually. It started November last year, the updates that I've been making. And I think my perfectionist brain says it's not good enough. And I want to embrace everything that I have personally learned in 2020 after this change has happened, because this was not something I predicted 2 years ago when I wrote it. I assumed that most offices would have offices when I wrote that. So now the changes that I'm making are towards the future that I envision, which is a more inclusive future, which is where we would be at a place where culturally and operationally, we're ready as organizations to create environments to allow people to work from anywhere. And that was not what I was thinking about before.
So what's the status of that draft?
That depends on the publisher, to be honest with you. I'm working continuously with them. We do not have a deadline right now. I'm hoping that it would come out in 2021.
It's an ebook though, right? Couldn't you just ship it?
It the first version was an ebook. The second version, the edits that I'm making, is supposed to be a physical book.
Got it. What else do you have going on this year?
Obviously, Remote Forever Summit. Duh.
Duh. So, well, we didn't even touch on that. So
no,
you
I should
and
have
I
mentioned
know about
it in the
it,
introduction.
But our listeners are like, what the heck? Did I fall asleep there for a bit? Tell us more about the Remote Forever Summit.
Yeah, we should totally redo my introduction, so I include it there.
Okay, take two.
A little bit. Remote Forever Summit is how my business started. In 2016, I sat down and I thought, what is going on in the Agile world? Why is everybody saying that you must be co-located if you want to be Agile, but every single team and organization I see is remote? Or is distributed, that's the better term for it. Remote Forever Summit came to be an experiment for me to see if there are other people like me out there who see that the reality of our Agile world is remote. And to my surprise, there were about 3,000 people who said yes. Well, exactly 2,700 people who said yes in that first edition in 2017. Every year I have repeated it, and every year the summit has grown. Last year we had that last year with 2019. Thank you. So yeah, we had about 10K people last year, and this year I hope that it's going to be at least the same amount. Hopefully I will see you guys there. We have arranged the summit to be slightly different than before. And that is because I have realized that people are exhausted with attending online meetings and online conferences. In the past, my summit was one of the two or one of the three online summits that existed in the Agile world. This year, every summit has gone online, right? So Remote Forever Summit is taking place on November 11th to the 17th. It's free to join and it's completely online. And the experience that you're gonna see is unlike most other conferences. You're gonna hear stories that would inspire you. And you're gonna hear them from people that you know and admire, like Lisa Atkins, Jochen Appelo, and remote work experts. So these are a mix of remote work experts and Agile experts. I have managed to get David Hansen, the co-founder of Basecamp and the author of Remote and Rework, to speak at the summit. And yeah, I'm really excited for it. I hope to see as many of you there as possible.
Beautiful. And that's Remote Forever. Wait. RemoteForeverSummit.com. We'll include that in the show notes. Well, that sounds like a wonderful place to end. Thank you, Mulud Ciccarelli, and to our listening audience. If you enjoyed, give us a review or a rating on your podcast platform of choice. Really, really helps others find us. First time tuning in, subscribe, catch the next one. And if you'd like to join us in discussing about how you're surviving, how you're remote working, how you're thriving, check out agileuprising.com and you'll find links to our Discord server. So until next time, thank you all. This is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.